talking to me?
Funny, like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead, make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
Welcome to We're Movie Geeks, the podcast. Today is August 24th, Monday morning, and we always like to start out talking about the top 10 at the box office. I believe it was American Ultra versus Hitman Agent 47 versus Sinister 2, and I'm going to assume everybody wants to see a stoner action comedy spy film, so I'm just going to assume American Ultra was number one. Michelle, am I right?
Hi, Tom. Hi, Jim. Welcome. Morning. Welcome to the dog days of summer at the weekend box office. Number one, Universal, straight out of Compton. It hit number
what?
One. Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. I'm telling you, it hit number one again with $26.7 million. It only had a 56% drop-off, but after 2 weeks, it now stands at $111 million total worldwide.
It beat American Ultra?
Yes. Even with the recent controversy, if you guys have heard, over the movie glossing over its members' treatment of women and the blowback, which forced Dr. Dre to apologize for his actions. You know, and even with that, the negative headlines, it's not slowing it down with audiences. Huh. So it was number one.
American Ultra was number two then. I assume.
At number two was Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
Oh, yeah. This is a repeat of last weekend, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, $11.7 million. Finally. Well, hang on a second. Audiences gave Sinister 2 the cold shoulder. Coming in at the number third spot, the sequel brought in a chilly $10.6 million. However, the 2012 original debuted with $18
million. So this is quite a drop from the original's opening, huh?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Almost 50%, like 40% or so. Yeah.
20th Century Fox's reboot video game, Hitman, Agent 47, was number four with $8.2 million. Mm-hmm. The 2007 original made $60.3
million. 60?
Total, you mean? Or opening weekend?
Oh. That was total.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, that was a heck of an opening weekend.
Yeah, I don't remember that. Yeah.
Number five, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., Warner Brothers film. Yeah, thank
dropped
you.
Two.
Yeah. It dropped 45%.
That was just week. That was just week two, right?
Yes, yeah. It brought in $7.4 million. Mm. Stoner comedy American Ultra was number six.
Number
with a
six.
That's a shock.
With a so-so $5.5 million. Yeah.
Well, I knew it wouldn't be number one, but I would have thought it would have at least been in the top five.
You might want to go check out on Twitter Max Landis, who wrote American Ultra.
He's not pulling a Josh Trank, is he?
Yeah, he kind of was.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. He couldn't understand why people weren't seeing his movie.
Oh, so he's
I saw it, and I can understand why people aren't seeing it. We'll get into that in a minute.
I was going to say, he's not criticizing the studio. He's criticizing the movie going public. He, huh?
Exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Okay. That's an interesting
he
take.
Was not happy.
That's endearing himself.
Mm-hmm. The Gift is doing really well with moviegoers. Mm. One of the summer surprise entries sits at number seven with $4.3 million. Ant-Man from Disney secured the number eight spot with $4.1 million.
Still amazing to me.
Number nine is The Unstoppable Minions. Universal's film brought in $3.7 million. Globally, it stands at $989 million, so it's going to hit the $1 billion mark here pretty soon. The flop of the summer.
Well, it's
Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Tomorrowland's feeling a little better about themselves after Fantastic Four, I think.
Was number 10 with $3.6 million. 20th Century Fox's picture lost almost 1,500 theaters in its third weekend, giving it a worldwide total of $49 million. Vacation is number 11 with $3.1 million. And Meryl Streep's Ricky and the Flash rounds out the top 12 with $3 million.
Hmm.
On a side note, the three new violent R-rated and poorly reviewed options divided up a similar audience. The box office was down 7.5% from the same weekend last year, according to box office data firm Rentrak. Without a much-anticipated release scheduled over the next 2 weeks, the lull is likely to continue through Labor Day weekend. Hmm. However, in limited release, Sony Picture Classics' Grandma, a well-reviewed comedy starring Lily Tomlin, opened on four screens with a strong per-screen average of 30,000.
Is that by one of the Weitz brothers?
I believe so.
Christopher Weitz, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Overseas, it was a great weekend for Tom Cruise and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Mm-hmm.
Their films led a star-powered global weekend with Paramount Pictures' 1-2 Punch, Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. That keeps moving towards the $500 million worldwide mark, and Terminator Genesis took the number one spot internationally as it opened in China this Sunday with a staggering $27.4 million in 25,000 theaters.
Wow.
Oh. Paramount Pictures, those two franchises doing well overseas. So, which begs the question, Will we see the next Terminator movie as Paramount has planned?
I suspect we will.
Yeah.
Could happen.
I mean, who'd have thought we'd have seen Hitman 2?
Mm-hmm.
Anything's possible.
Yeah. Let's get going with our reviews. I think we should start with American Ultra, which Jim and I both saw.
Chariot Progressive, listen. Mandelbrot set is in motion. Echo Horizon has emerged. Chariot Progressive.
Is that a lyric from something? Do you want your soup?
Jim gave it 3 out of 5 stars, which I thought was ridiculously generous. Jim, what did you like or dislike about American Ultra?
Well, you know, I kind of like John Leguizamo, and it turns out he kind of likes me. So, yeah.
On Twitter, he retweeted your review.
But yeah, I think I was one of the few reviewers to actually mention, because his performance in it, he's only got a couple of scenes in it, but he gives it a jolt of life it so needs.
It did.
And what did you call him?
I called him a motor mouth, Gatling gun, entertainment machine, pretty much.
The MVP of the movie.
Yeah.
I think that's what he really liked about your...
Yeah. Yeah. So that was good in it. I did enjoy maybe about the first half hour or so, or maybe the first 45 minutes.
You mean the stoner comedy?
Yeah. Well, that was kind of entertaining. And, when they were starting to set up the whole CIA thing, and then I hate to single out another actor, but they bring in Topher Grace's character, who was so obnoxious. And you're supposed to dislike him, of course, in the film. Mm-hmm. But boy, he kind of gets grating after a while.
Well, it was a poorly written character.
Oh, yeah. You could make a more interesting villain that's just not completely nasty to everybody all the time, it was nice to see Connie Britton in it. She generally is playing moms these days, so it's good to see her kicking. So, yeah, she was in one of your favorite films of the summer, wasn't she? There? The Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl. She was the mother of the hero in that.
Oh, boy. I think Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl was the only movie I've seen this year worse than American Ultra. And she was in both. Well, good for her. No, I don't begrudge her.
Yeah, but
she seems like a fine actress. She needs to pick better projects.
That's true. That the first action scene in which the hidden talents of Jesse Eisenberg kick in, that's kind of fun. But then it just keeps repeating it and repeating it, and we know that he's going to just savagely take out these assassins, and it kind of gets kind of tireless after a while.
It gets tiresome. It's so not funny. You mentioned it was written by Max Landis, who was the son of John Landis, who directed two of the greatest comedies of all time, Animal House and The Blues Brothers. And this young Landis, it's just all premise. It's, what if a stoner was really kind of a Jason Bourne, where he had these powers and these skills that he was unaware that he had, and he takes on the CIA? I didn't really get it. Why was the CIA going to kill him in the first place? That wasn't very well established.
Well, it just seems like Topher Grace's character, he had his own sort of project in taking these people out of asylums, out of the mental health facilities, and training them to be assassins. And it looked like he wanted his project or his idea to oversee and eliminate Connie Britton's, which was to take these sort of misdemeanors, guys like Jesse Eisenberg's character, who they mentioned had been in and out of the local police station getting popped for pot possession all the time.
Now, he and Landis, the director and Landis, did Chronicle together.
No, that's not correct. The director is Nima Nourizada, who his only previous film was called Project X, was a found footage film about a party, which was better than this. It wasn't particularly great.
Yeah, okay. Josh Trank was the director of Chronicle.
Yeah,
is doing the screenplay for the upcoming Victor Frankenstein.
That's right, which makes me question how good that movie is going to be. I saw the trailer for it, and it looked okay.
So, even with a different director, would that have saved maybe American Ultra?
No, it was the script. Yeah. It wasn't remotely funny. Okay. It was all premise.
Well,
it was what if this stoner was really a secret agent? Okay, that's not a terrible premise, but there was nothing funny. There's a scene where he picks up a frying pan and he deflects a bullet off of it, and it goes through one of the bad guys, and he says, the old frying pan bullet trick, or something like that. I think he expected everybody in the audience to just roar and applaud because that was such a funny line. I don't know. You saw it with a full crowd. crowd. Were people laughing at this movie? Because I saw it Friday night at 7, and audience was just silent.
Yeah, not, wow. not much. But, you know, I say there wasn't a lot of laughs in Chronicle, so I, you know.
Well, Chronicle wasn't a comedy.
Yeah, well, I would have a feeling this was like a comedy with lots and lots of action.
Yeah.
That's what the trailer wants you to think.
It was so boring.
But, yeah, I will say one of the positives. I like the relationship between Eisenberg's character and Kristen Stewart's character. I thought it was kind of interesting. She's pretty good at it.
She
you
is
know?
Pretty good, mm-hmm. and she's sort of sexy in a couple of scenes. And Walter Scoggins, is that his name?
Walter Goggins.
Goggins, yeah. I thought he was Laffer, who was one of the villains. I thought he was kind of interesting, too. Well, I thought he was better than Leguizamo. Leguizamo got on my nerves.
Well, you know, I Goggins, you know, once he loses his teeth, they just, you know, for a quick laugh, they want to show him without any teeth in his head, and they think that's kind of funny, and it's not. And, you know, that it looks like they were going to try to make him sort of a Joker character. And
Laffer.
But he never really really had any big interesting lines like the Joker did in the old especially the Christopher Nolan Batman film. But it just got pretty dull after a while. And Bill Pullman is shown, I think, in the trailer, and he really has nothing to do in it except sort of being the cleanup guy.
Yeah, he shows up 10 minutes before the movie's over.
Yeah, but you get to see him, ominously getting into a helicopter and being, looking kind of ticked off. It's just, it's not much,
I think we need to take another look at the Chronicle. We need to reassess that movie after Fantastic Four and now American Ultra, two of the worst movies of the summer.
Yeah.
It didn't do very well. It's probably going to die a quick death. And you know what it reminded me of is Somebody Conquers the World or something.
Oh, Scott Pilgrim Conquers the World.
Yeah, Scott Pilgrim.
Versus the
World, which I hate. It kind of reminded me of that. It was this sort of hipster comedy with a lot of bloody action that I think maybe young audiences may rediscover on DVD, and maybe it'll eventually even have some sort of cult following, which is unfortunate.
Well, I tell you, if you're looking for a great Jesse Eisenberg, Kristen Stewart film, go rent Adventureland.
Thank you. Just going to say that.
This is much, Adventureland is much, much, much better. Than I will say the Scott Pilgrim versus the World is much better than American Ultra.
Yeah.
It's a lot funnier, that's for sure.
Yeah, I didn't care for that one either. All right, so we do not recommend. Well, I really hated American Ultra. Jim liked it a bit better than I did, but neither of us, I don't think, really recommend it. Sinister 2.
It's the kids. He gets the kids.
This one's mine.
Your family's in danger.
Why?
He's gonna hurt us.
I won't let that happen.
I think I'm the only one in the room who saw Sinister 2. Mm-hmm. Sinister 1 came out a couple years ago, and it had Ethan Hawke, and he moves into this house with his family. And did you see that one, Jim, part 1?
I did see the first one, yeah.
Yeah.
And he finds this 16mm projector and films up in the attic, and he watches them, and they turn out to be sort of snuff films that shows how the family that previously lived in the house had been murdered. And it was a pretty scary movie. It has this boogeyman. What do they call him? Like the boogaloo?
The bagul.
The bagul, yeah.
And they've been showing it this past weekend leading up to opening. It's still a creepy...
Yeah, the second one isn't very scary at all, and they really play down the whole bagul. The bagul shows up a few times early in the film. It's about this woman and her two sons, and she's escaped from this abusive marriage, so she goes to this farmhouse, and the farmhouse is haunted by these ghosts of these children who had been murdered there. But then her ex-husband finds him, and then he becomes the villain, so it becomes kind of mean-spirited, because they don't really show it, but they talk about how he had beaten his sons and sent one of them to the hospital, and he's just unbelievably cruel, and he's trying to get custody, and he has control of these sheriffs that run out there, and so it becomes less of a horror film, and then sort of this domestic abuse drama, which is unpleasant, and who wants to watch that when they go see a horror film? It's not very good. There's a few cheap scares, like cats jumping out of the darkness and things like that, which those things haven't scared me in years. Like I say, it's not very good. Shannon Sossaman, who I've seen in some other films, she plays the mom. She's okay.
Yeah, Night's Tale.
She was in, and she was in Wayward Pines over the summer on Fox.
Yeah. So
it has a different director, this one.
Yeah.
When I first started seeing the commercials and trailers for this, I was thinking it was a prequel, but it's not. It is.
No, it's a sequel.
It's not the same house that Ethan Hawke was
house.
In.
And there's also 16mm films up in the attic of this farmhouse, which they watch, and those things are pretty nasty. And that's really when the movie comes to life, even though they're kind of sick, they're kind of dark. People getting murdered in sort of creative ways. There's a scene where rats chew through people's bodies, mm-hmm. and another one where these people are hanging upside down over this pit of alligators.
And that was some of the last clips that Focus Features, which is Gramercy Pictures now, those were some of the last ones that they revealed, like, right before the opening.
So they want you to think it's about the boogeyman and not about this real
And to open in third spot with only $10.6 million? Yeah. Yikes.
But it probably didn't cost much to make. Probably didn't cost much more than $10 or $20 million to make, so it'll make its money back and then be gone. So I don't really recommend Sinister 2, although, you know, it's rated R, so if you like some gore and some torture and some of that kind of stuff, if that floats your boat, I guess you could do worse.
Was it better than The Gallows, Tom?
I would say it was better than Gallows, yeah.
Well, that's good, at least.
Because at least, you know, it was something for the gore hounds.
Oh, that's
cool. I'm an old gore hound from way back. I have every issue of Fangoria. So there's something for those people, but neither that nor Gallows were particularly scary.
Yeah, well, at least this one stuck with its R rating. It didn't try to clean things up for the PG-13 crowd.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't really recommend Sinister 2. Let's talk about a smallish film that opens, I guess, a week from Friday at the Landmark Theaters, Learning to Drive.
Who is it?
Darwan Singh Tor for your driving lesson, please.
What happened?
We're moving.
That's good.
It's about time you started driving.
I used to have a husband who drove.
Oh, Ted.
Where do they find these skanks?
They just like them young. You can mold them however they like. Teach them tricks.
Jim and Michelle saw it.
Very entertaining little film. Kind of a nice character study, the sort of the story of a friendship. Patricia Clarkson, who has been on my radar, I guess, since The Untouchables, when she was playing Kevin Costner's wife in that.
Yeah, she's Deadpool, which was the clearest, I think that was before The Untouchables.
Yeah, well, she was Dirty Harry's sort of reporter girlfriend in that, right? Yeah, yeah, they had an interesting cast in that. They had Liam Neeson and Jim Carrey.
That's right.
But Miss Clarkson, she's been doing great work for many, many years now. This is a nice showcase for her. She plays a woman that's her life is kind of falling apart. She's a book reviewer, and her husband of many years, played by Jake Weber, who you might remember from the TV show The Medium. He's her cheating spouse, and he leaves her, and her daughter, who's played by Grace Gummer, finally another Meryl Streep daughter, comes to visit. And she's
How many daughters does she have?
She's got the two, right? Yeah. And trying to pull her out of her funk and wants her to come visit her at this farm that she's working on as part of college, but Patricia Clarkson doesn't drive. So the night of the big breakup between her and her husband, they get into the cab of Ben Kingsley's character, who is a Sikh, the name of his religion there. He's been expelled from India, and he's trying to make ends meet. He's driving a cab at night, but during the day, he works at a place that teaches people how to drive, a driving learning school.
Hence the title.
Yes, yes. And he gives her his card, and this sort of starts them on a sort of, you know, there's a teacher-student thing, but they get to know each other, and she gets to, you know, be exposed to his culture, and it's really great. There's some interesting supporting players in it, too. Besides who I've mentioned already, we've got two people from The Daily Show. We've got Samantha Bee playing Patricia Clarkson's sister, and which I don't think she's probably done a couple of films, but I don't think I recall seeing her anything before.
So are you reviewing this, Jim?
I think
we're going to have Kate Marquis.
Oh, Kate Marquis. Okay.
Yeah, the film is from Isabella Coquette, who did Elegy in 2008. With Patricia Clarkson and Ben Kingsley. Thank you.
Did you like it as much as Jim?
I did. I think it's just a really charming, it's a very charming summer, you know, beginning, end of summer film.
Like a fall film.
Yeah. I think it'll find an audience. It's just, and it opened up this weekend in a few theaters. And
maybe an older audience?
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Definitely.
I wholeheartedly recommended it to my mother yesterday when I was talking to her. She would love it there. What tickled me during the film was that Samantha Bee's character sets up her sister on a date, a blind date with this banker, and it's played by Matt Salinger. So Captain America's in it from 1990.
A really pleasant film. A very nice film.
Nice new look, New York locations. They spent a lot of time in Queens. The interesting take on arranged marriages there, because Ben Kingsley's character is going to meet his pick up his bride at the airport and see her in person for the first time, and it's kind of interesting. And it's very very entertaining.
Has a nice resolution to it. Cinematography looks great. Score's great. Okay. Just a very nice beginning of fall.
All right, well, good. It sounds like Jim and Michelle recommend Learning to Drive. Kate Runke will be reviewing it a week from Friday. You think Kate liked it? Did you guys talk to her?
She did too. Okay. We all talked afterwards. Yeah, we all really loved it.
All right, that's Learning to Drive. So we did not like American Ultra last week. They had only the two screenings, and they had them on the same night, a screening for American Ultra and a screening for Hitman Agent 47, and all the critics in town went to the American Ultra screening because they assumed that that was going to be the better film. Michelle and I went to the Hitman Agent 47 screening with, what, maybe 10 people?
Mm-hmm. That was a total press screening.
Yeah, and surprise, surprise, I think Hitman Agent 47 was a much better film than American Ultra.
You know why you're still alive? Because I chose not to kill you. But they will.
Why do they want to kill me?
We were part of the same program.
They want what's inside our DNA.
Okay, untie me.
You're the same as me.
So untie yourself.
I had kind of low expectations. Hitman was starred Timothy Olyphant and came out 5 or 6 years ago and wasn't particularly memorable. It was okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of surprised that they made a second Hitman movie. But Michelle and I saw it and we both liked it. What did you like about it, Michelle?
I liked the pacing of it. I liked Zachary Quinto was in it. I liked the actress in it. She was very smart.
Hannah Ware.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot to like about it.
Yeah,
pacing was really good. You know, they kept with a lot of the main themes from the video game. Just a good end of the summer kind of throwaway movie. Yeah.
And it's interesting to compare it to Man from U.N.C.L.E., which we saw the week before. Man from U.N.C.L.E. they had spent all this money on these costumes and this score and this photography and, it had all this style, but it was just inert. It just sat there. Where Hitman Agent 47, it didn't have a very good script. They didn't spend a whole lot of money on it, but it had all the momentum. It was nothing but momentum.
So you're saying it had a pulse, eh?
It did. It had a lot of imaginatively directed action sequences.
From Alexander Bach, and this was his directorial debut.
I mean, there's a scene where Hannah Ware is tied up and knocked unconscious. Then she wakes up in a helicopter, and she's the only person in the helicopter. And she has to fly the helicopter while tied up into this building to kill all these bad guys. And it's just great. And then there's another scene where they're great car chase, and then these metal cables shoot out to suspend the car above this street. And then there's this whole shootout and action scene involving that. So Rupert Friend is replaced. Timothy Olyphant is the bald agent. And I think the plot... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that role was pretty much a done deal that Paul Walker was going to be in it before his untimely death.
Mm-hmm.
He had been in previously in Young Victoria.
He didn't really strike me as a particularly charismatic actor. He sort of looked like a buff, bald Rowan Atkinson.
But I like the chemistry between he and Hannah Ware. I thought they were pretty funny.
Yeah, and then this whole place, a lot of it took place in Singapore, and they did some interesting things with locations in Singapore, which they didn't, unlike Man from U.N.C.L.E., they didn't have to build sets or spend a lot of money on some sort of 60s recreations. That, the plot is basically that they've established this hitman agency and then they've abandoned it, and it's sort of like Terminator, because they need to find the person who started it, and they go after his daughter, and then you've got Zach Quinto sort of as the Reed character who's protecting her, and then the hitman is trying to kill her. But then there's a twist about 40 minutes in. The hitman's really not trying to kill her, and Zach Quinto as John Smith isn't really a good guy trying to protect her at all. It's all sort of upends at that point.
That's a lot of clandestine enemies, that type of,
double and triple crosses.
And then it turns out Zach Quinto has this bulletproof skin.
He's his own.
Yeah. So he's like a supervillain, as it turns out. Not a great movie. Not a great script.
Well, it sounds kind of like goofy fun.
Yeah, it is.
That's exactly what it was.
I kind of went in with pretty low expectations and was pleasantly surprised. Danny Young reviewed it at WeirdMovieGeeks.com and gave it a 3 out of 5, I believe. I might have given it 3.5. I liked Hitman Agent 47. And like Michelle mentioned, it was based on a video game. I'm unfamiliar with all video games. Have you played the video game, Michelle?
I watched my son, who was 17. So he was like, the prime demographic of... And he really liked it. He noticed a few things, and I'm sure other video game, gamers will notice. Mm-hmm. But all in all, he liked it.
He was happy with it.
Yeah.
Good. So we actually recommend Hitman Agent 47 in spite of ourselves. A couple of movies opening next Friday. What's going to be number one? No Escape.
There's like a war going on out there.
We're going to die here. Listen to me.
Where's Lucy?
Stay here. Lock the door. Lock the door.
No way will No Escape be number one.
And that actually opens on Wednesday. Why does it open on Wednesday? It's not a holiday, really.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, maybe they think they're, you know, those extra 2 days the box office will give it a jump off the on the other releases and all that. You know, that was a thing that a friend of ours was complaining about on Facebook. He says, well, you know, Compton, you know, and Uncle, why they got to pit them against each other? So, well, because they open on the same day. That's why, you know, it's always a contest between whoever opens on that same day. So maybe they think that'll give them an edge.
And Owen Wilson and Lake Bell star in No Escape as a couple who are in some sort of third world country. I don't think they even say what country it is.
And along with Pierce Brosnan.
Brosnan. And there's some sort of military coup. And I guess they're killing Americans for some reason.
All foreigners.
I guess. And I guess Owen Wilson with his blonde hair maybe sticks out.
Yeah, I guess the original title was supposed to have been The Coup, and they decided to
it was. Exactly. Yeah. And this is directed from John Eric Dowdle, the Dowdle brothers, who did As Above, So Below in 2014 and Quarantine.
And Devil, which was a Shy Malan script. And As Above, So Below and Quarantine were actually two of the better found footage horror films.
Yeah.
And No Escape's not a found footage horror film, but it sort of has that similar, it looks like a lot of handheld action. And so, I don't know, maybe it's not that bad. It doesn't look very good in the trailer. They keep showing, you know, Owen Wilson throwing his daughter from the rooftop of one building to another. Like, that seems to be the centerpiece of the trailer. Oh. I hope that's not the centerpiece of the films, because you know he's not going to drop his daughter eight stories.
Of course, well, it'll be interesting to see Lake Bell kind of veer away from the romantic comedies and the regular comedies into a really heavy dramatic thing and see how she pulls that off. Yeah. But I still hope she'll get a chance to direct and write her own film again, because I think Inner World is so terrific.
Yeah, and Jim will be reviewing No Escape. That opens Wednesday, so I guess Jim's review will go up Tuesday night at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. I will be reviewing We Are Your Friends, a movie I don't know a whole lot about. I've seen the trailer for it.
Whenever you guys are ready to start making some real loot, you need to holler at me.
If you think I'm going to work for that guy, you're out of your mind.
This is our future.
No.
I mean, Cole, are we ever going to be better than this?
James thinks you're really talented.
Any successful artist, they have this moment where they stop being an admirer and they find their signature. Sounds have soul. Build them from scratch. Find new ones. Head out of that laptop and start listening to what the real world is trying to tell you.
Stars Zac Efron and
Emily Ratajkowski.
Oh, yes, from
Wes Bentley.
Yeah, Wes Bentley. Emily is from Gone Girl.
Yes,
quite sexy in Gone Girl, and she looks great in the trailer.
Quite bored in Entourage.
I didn't see Entourage. Oh,
yeah, she looks like she doesn't want to be there.
But I'm not sure what it's about. I think he's a some sort of DJ at parties, and he's mixing music, and he wants to get in the music industry or something.
Maybe it's kind of like the movie Cocktail or something. And how you know, he gets swept up into this world and all that, and all the temptations.
So I don't know. I have an open mind.
Caught between a forbidden romance and the expectations of his friends, aspiring DJ Cole Carter attempts to find the path in life that leads to fame and fortune.
Oh, all right. Yeah, I don't know. The trailer doesn't do much for me, but I'm not the demo audience for that, I guess.
Who directed this? Do we know?
Max Joseph, who also did Garden of Eden 2012.
I don't remember Garden of Eden.
I don't recall that at all,
All right, well, look for my review Friday of We Are Your Friends at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. Mistress America opens Friday.
I'm your roommate. You know the feeling of being at a party where you don't know anybody? College is like that the whole time.
You should call Brooke.
I hear she's fun.
Hey, baby Tracy.
Being around Brooke made you want to find life, not hide from it.
There's a screening of that tonight, but Jim and I are committed to seeing No Escape. Mistress America is from director Noah Baumbach, who just earlier this year directed one of my favorite films. That was called While We're Young, and that starred Ben Kingsley and Naomi Watts. Really, really funny movie. Mistress America stars Greta Gerwig, who starred in Baumbach's couple of his other films, Frances Ha
and
Greenberg. She's a really exciting and attractive and talented actress, I think.
Yeah, I think Frances Ha was on my top 10 list that year, a couple of years ago. So, I really enjoyed that.
It got great buzz coming out of
Mistress America.
Yeah, okay. from the film festival. So
it's about a college freshman, not played by Greta Gerwig. I'm not sure who plays her, yeah. But she hooks up with her older stepsister, played by Greta.
It's Lola Kirk.
Okay, Lola Kirk.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with that actress.
Yeah, it looks like a sort of budding friendship, kind of getting to know each other and,
while at college, though. So I think it's a college set film.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's in New York City, I guess. Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see.
And well, we won't tonight. Darn it.
The screenplay is by Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig.
Okay.
So they collaborated on Frances Ha. So, yeah. Hopefully we'll get a chance to see it sometime.
Well, I'll see it. I'm sure I'll see it this weekend. So that's Mistress America. And who's reviewing that?
I think Michael is.
Michael Hafner will be reviewing that for WeirdMovieGeeks.com. So look for that Thursday night. Yeah. A Walk in the Woods opens. Is that open this Friday?
That opens a week from Wednesday.
From Wednesday. Okay. Another Wednesday opening. Well, that's
before
near,
Labor Day.
So that makes a little more sense. But, I don't know a whole lot about Walk in the Woods. I haven't even watched the trailer. I know Robert Redford is in it and Nick Nolte.
I'm tired of life being all about ailments and funerals. I want to push myself.
You want to hike the Appalachian Trail?
2,000 miles.
You have gone mad.
It's my old pup tent.
It's the perfect place for you to spend the night.
2,000 people a year try to do this. Less than 10% make it. Fit people in their 20s can't do it, Dad.
You'll need a rain cover, too.
Rain cover? Why?
To keep out the rain.
What's it about?
Nolte, Emma Thompson.
After
spending 2 decades in England, Bill Bryson returns to the U.S., where he decides the best way to connect with his homeland is to hike the Appalachian Trail with one of his oldest friends.
It sounds like a male Wild.
It's a buddy movie.
Well, I know that Redford is saying he had wanted to do this with Paul Newman, but of course, he became too ill, and then he finally passed. So I guess, Redford and Nolte were in that, that flick about 60s radicals.
With Julie Christie.
They were on the run.
I reviewed that, and I can't even remember the name of it. And our favorite actor.
The people you know or the people you hang out with or something like that. Yeah.
Michael Arndt does the screenplay for this. He did Oblivion, Little Miss Sunshine.
Okay.
That wasn't very
good. I guess that's how they struck up a friendship, Redford and Nolte. Yeah, they might make a pretty interesting team. It looks like they're kind of showing some of the cute stuff in the trailer. They wanted to make it look like, handsomer, still grumpy old men, sort of hiking on in the woods and encountering bears and things like that. So, I don't know. It might be pretty good. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the director has done Big Miracle, lots of TV shows.
Big Miracle is a pretty good movie. And that's the one about the trapped whales. Uh-huh.
Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, about a boy.
About a boy.
Oh, that was a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. This might have a little grit to it. I'm assuming it's PG-13, this new one.
Yeah.
So.
This one?
Yeah.
Well, this is rated R.
Walking the Woods is rated R.
We have our contest posted, and when I saw the poster, I was like,
"Did we ever figure out if Hitman Agent 47 is rated R?" We debated that.
It is rated R.
Oh, it was rated R. Okay.
Yes.
It was kind of on the line there. It was a little mild for an R, but I think it was a little too rough for a PG-13. We were sort of debating that.
The director of Walk in the Woods is Ken Kwapis, and he's from Belleville, Illinois.
Oh, okay.
That's right.
Okay.
He worked on The Office, I believe.
Hey, you're talking about the R rating. I was this weekend on TCM. I saw a commercial for this Fathom Events screening of Psycho coming up.
Yes.
And they slapped an R rating on it.
So
I guess it would turn out to, they thought it was just maybe too intense or something. Huh. I was surprised,
What about the remake of Psycho? What was that rated?
Oh, that was R, yeah.
Was that R?
Well, yeah. And
I guess that makes sense because that was a shot-for-shot recreation. So I guess if that was rated R, Psycho would be rated R.
Yeah.
It just seems funny that Robert Redford, after he's been in Captain America, and now he's in Walk in the Woods, and then this winter he's got Truth coming out about the Dan Rather story.
Yeah.
And he's in Peach Dragon coming up in 2016.
He's in Peach Dragon?
He's in Peach Dragon.
Does he play the Mickey Rooney role?
A dragon, a dragon. I swear I saw a dragon. A green and seething, fire-breathing monster is in sight.
He plays Grace's father, which is,
Who is Grace in it, do you know?
That is Bryce Dallas Howard.
But yeah, he was a great villain in Captain America Winter Soldier. That's
wasn't
for sure.
He?
Yeah.
Okay. Alexander Pierce.
And I'm sure he'll be a great villain in Truth this winter. That was, of course, a thing from Batman. We don't usually talk about television at We Are Movie Geeks because we're movie geeks, not television geeks. Well, I guess we're sort of television geeks. But anyways, we do want to pay a tribute to one of our favorite television actresses who passed away last week, Yvonne Craig.
One of the true sweethearts of 60s television.
No doubt. And one of the sexiest sweethearts of 60s television, up there with Barbara Eden and Ginger Grant.
Yeah.
I mean, when she wore that skin-tight Batgirl outfit, you know, they say, oh, she was my first crush. That becomes a bit of a cliche. But Yvonne Craig really was my first crush. I would have been like 5 or 6 years old when I first discovered Yvonne Craig. And I was like, yowza.
Steaming us to death will do you no good, Penguin. The law will get you in the end.
I am merely going to dunk you a little.
Before you throw everyone in the putt, Penguin, you may find yourself in hot water.
Batgirl, how did you find this place?
I just adore weddings, Penguin.
Or funerals before weddings, Batgirl. Get her!
I thought that maybe one of the cable channels or TV Land or MeTV would do a tribute. And they did do a little mini one this Saturday, but I thought, well, besides, I knew that she was, of course, Batgirl. I knew she was in that Star Trek episode. I knew of a couple episodes of Dobie Gillis, but I couldn't think of anything else. And then I looked on her on IMDb, and she was in practically every show from the 60s.
Yeah, before Batman and a little bit after. I mean, she was born in 1937, and she did a few films. She was in Kissing Cousins with Elvis.
It happened at the World's Fair also with Elvis.
With Elvis, supposedly she dated Elvis briefly.
She was in High Time with Bing Crosby, early Blake Edwards film from the early 60s.
I think she was younger than she looked, or no, she was older than she looked, because I think she was playing teens when she was in her early 20s. In fact, I assumed she was in her early 20s when she did Batman, but she was actually 28 or 29. Gidget, she was in the first Gidget with Sandra Dee. She was one of Gidget's buddies. Ski Party, which was one of the one of the beach movies, but they actually sent him to a ski lodge.
Was she in the infamous Mars Needs Women? Was that her?
The message is, Mars needs women.
These were the words that startled the world. This was the reason for an invasion that shocked the earth.
Yeah, Mars Needs Women. Yeah, that was 1967, which was the year she would have been in Batman. I'm not sure if she did that before Batman or not. I remember seeing Mars Needs Women when I was a kid. That was an early independent made-for-television movie.
Oh, okay. Is that Tommy Kirk was in
Tommy
that,
Kirk,
right?
Who was also in Ski Party with her. Mm-hmm. It was made by Larry Buchanan, who made a whole series of these weird made-for-television movies. Most of them were remakes of American International films. There was The Eye Creatures, which is a remake of
Invasion of the Star People?
Invasion of the Saucer.
Saucerman, but
Creatures of Destruction was a remake. She Creature. Year 2889 was a remake of Day the World Ended. So he made these really cheap, and they're really hard to sit through. They're not very good.
So they were sold directly to syndicated stations not to the networks.
And you probably saw these when you were little. I know I did. But I remember seeing Mars Needs Women and thinking, oh, there's Batgirl. So that one was sort of elevated by her presence.
I almost forgot she was the femme fatale in How to Frame a Fig.
That's
so
right.
She was opposite the great Don Knotts.
And that's not really one of his best, and it's not at the level of Love God or Ghost of Mr. Chicken, it's elevated by her presence as well.
So, Tom, have you read her autobiography From Ballet to the Batcave and Beyond from 2000? Okay.
Yeah, you know, you were talking about how she was actually a little older than the role she played. We had kind of the flip side of that last week with the passing of Melody Patterson, because that was kind of a mini scandal when it was found out that when she was first started playing Wrangler Jane on F Troop, she was 16.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so Ken Berry must have felt very, very odd when that news came out.
Yeah.
But the only films, we mentioned a couple of films that she did besides her extensive TV work. We mainly thought of Blood and Lace.
Yeah, that was Melody Patterson.
Was she in, like, Flint?
No,
but Yvonne Craig was.
Right,
certainly.
Okay.
She was a Russian ballerina, I believe, in that. So.
Yeah.
And Melody was in Cycle Savages.
Cycle Savages, with Bruce Dern. It was a biker movie. That was pretty much it for her career. And Yvonne Craig, after Batman, really the only theatrical film of note that she made was How to Frame a Fig.
Yeah, and then was selling real estate for several years.
And got married, and I think she had some stepsons she helped raise. But I met her a couple of times. I met her at Chicago at one of the Ray Quartz shows, and this was probably around 1995. And we had a nice talk. She had been in an episode of Man with a Camera with Charles Bronson. Oh. And I asked her about that. And she said, oh, she'd love to see that again. And I happened to have a VHS tape I sent her a copy of. And she wrote me a nice letter.
Yeah, all the stuff on the internet I've seen since her passing are just remarkable stories about what a sweetheart she was. And a really, really nice person.
Yvonne Craig. You know what else she was in? She was in One Spy Too Many, which was one of the Man from U.N.C.L.E. I used to take a couple of episodes and stitch them together and release them theatrically. And that one, she wasn't on the Man from U.N.C.L.E. show. They actually shot some extra scenes with her as Mr. Waverly's daughter, Maude Waverly. So
One of the obits says she appeared in television series, after Batgirl, appeared in television series $6 Million Man, yeah. Mod Squad, Starsky and Hutch, Kojak, and Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah, wasn't she in the Bigfoot episode of Man from U.N.C.L.E.? I think so, yeah.
You mean $6 Million Man?
And I recall that well after the Batman TV show was off the air, they did this commercial about sort of equal pay for women,
yeah,
where she had to rescue Batman and Robin from a bomb, and Burt Ward was playing Robin in it, but Batman was played by Dick Gauthier.
Oh, yeah.
Quick, Batgirl, untie us before it's too late.
It's already too late. I've worked for you a long time, and I'm paid less than Robin.
Holy discontent!
Same job, same employer means equal pay for men and women.
No time for jokes, Batgirl.
It's no joke. It's the federal equal pay law.
Holy act of Congress.
But she still made quite a fetching Batgirl.
Oh, she did. And she was
Barbara
Gordon, Commissioner Gordon's daughter, and she was a librarian.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I only really knew her from the Star Trek episode.
Yeah, Orion, whom gods destroy.
Green Orion slave girl Marta.
Very, very memorable in that. But so it must have been required a lot of good acting on her part, because I think she had some romantic scenes with Mr. Shatner. Mm-hmm. Supposedly there were sparks that flew between them on the set.
But not the good kind of spark.
No. Quite a nice lady.
Yep. Yvonne Craig, rest in peace. We are movie geeks. You can read a little tribute we wrote to her. We mentioned Hitman Agent 47. I would think Hitman Agent 47 may be the best movie made based on a video game, which is the good news. The bad news is that's not saying much. we're going to talk a little bit about movies based on video games, and I printed out a list, and I'm looking at this list, sort of shaking my head, thinking, I've seen maybe half of the movies on this list, and they're all pretty awful.
Yeah, I think I've seen one, so.
Yeah. Now, Michelle, why do you think that have trouble making a good movie based on a video game?
I think what was the one with Charlize Theron they tried to do a few years ago?
Eon Flux?
Yes, thank you.
That was based on an anime.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This, but I like Lara Croft Tomb Raider, and I like Final Fantasy, and what they've done with the Resident Evil. But for the most part, I think just trying to get the heart of the video game and why gamers like it. I mean, especially Doom. The people who love Doom, including my husband, they couldn't wait for Doom. And then when it came out, they were like, this is not this is not the video game.
Is that the one with The Rock?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Dwayne Johnson. Yeah.
I think my theory is, video games are fun because they're interactive. You're playing a video game. Movies are more passive. You're sitting there watching. I mean, it's not fun to watch someone else play a video game.
Right.
Yes.
But
people were looking forward to Max Payne. And even with Mark Wahlberg in it, they just,
Oh, I'll give you my Lara Croft story. A few years ago, I noticed that the film came out in 2001. A few years before that came out, when there was talk of a film, I was at a comic shop, and there was this fellow at the counter pontificating to the fellow at the registry. He said, yeah, they're going to do the Lara Croft film, and I've heard that they're going to allow them to put Indiana Jones in it so they can get some interest in the character, because nobody really cares about him anymore. And I sat there just kind of fuming. He's like, no, that's not right.
No. That's funny.
And Prince of Persia, Sands of Time, that was supposed to be...
The first video game was... first video game movie was Super Mario.
Oh, yeah. That was with Bob Hoskins, right? And with John Leguizamo.
Yeah, that's right.
My buddy.
They're brothers. They're plumbers.
Oh, no.
Mario! Luigi!
They're on the trail of a kidnapped princess. And a mystical meteorite.
That was 93.
Samantha Matheson. Dennis Hopper was the villain in that, wasn't he?
It is kind of funny. It's kind of entertaining.
King Koopa?
Street Fighter was a video game, and Jean-Claude Van Damme starred in that one. I think that was a pretty substantial hit. They even remade that a couple years ago.
Yeah, that was the last film of Raul Julia, as I recall.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did it for his kids.
It was.
They had to have had that oxygen tank waiting for him behind the camera, because he was not well when he was doing that, from what I understand. So there you go.
Mortal Kombat, 1995. That was 20 years ago.
You have been chosen to defend the realm of Earth in a tournament called Mortal Kombat. You Your world is but one of many realms. One of them is a forsaken land called Outworld, ruled by an immortal who has crowned himself emperor.
I remember my nephew was a big fan of Mortal Kombat, and it just had these horrible CGI effects. But I think it was a pretty big hit.
Yeah.
I think I recall seeing that with my nephew, but just kind of being bored out of my skull watching it.
Yeah, I'm looking at this list. You know what this list has a lot in common is Uwe Boll.
Yeah.
Uwe Boll directed at least 5 movies on this list. Uh-huh. Uwe Boll is a notorious, infamous German director who just makes the most horrible movies. But he actually has a pretty good sense of humor and attitude about his horrible direction. His movies get terrible reviews. I remember House of the Dead, which is actually one of the few video games I actually played. And the movie did play like the video game. It even had some of the same graphics. But it was just terrible. But Uwe Boll actually went and challenged some movie critics who were giving his movies bad reviews to boxing matches. And some of these movie critics, I think a couple of them from Ain't It Cool, took him up on his challenge. So they did this thing. They called it Raging Boll. And they had Uwe Boll and these movie critics boxing. And then he took those scenes of him boxing these movie critics and put them in a movie he made called Postal, which was based on a video game. I never saw Postal. But he also did Alone in the Dark. That had Christian Slater. That was just terrible.
Oh.
Blood Rain, which starred Christina Loken, who had played in Terminator 3 the year before. Just terrible. Postal, I mentioned. In the Name of the King, there was 3 of those, and those are based on a video game. Those had Jason Statham and Ron Perlman.
Was Ray Liotta in one of them, or am I thinking something else?
I don't know. He could have been.
Yeah, that Alone in the Dark had Tara Reid in it, too, didn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I saw that at the theater. Terrible. The first Lara Croft had an early role for Daniel Craig.
Well, I'm looking at Wing Commander. Was that the one with Freddie Prinze Jr. and...
Saffron Burroughs, Jürgen Prochnow. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of.
Max Payne was an early role for Mila Kunis. But yeah, this isn't a much of a list.
They did 2 Silent Hills. Okay, I was thinking there was 2 of them here.
Those are lousy. I saw both of those.
The Lara Croft movies did really well, and there's still talk of them trying to do another one. Whether Angelina Jolie, which she probably won't be in another one, but there's talk of still.
Well, her father John Voight was in the first one. Is that the only time they've acted together? Didn't they have sort of a falling out?
Right. Well, yeah. And I think they've come back around, but that was the first. Yeah.
I think they had a little role when she was little in Table for Five. I think it was, or Table for 3 or something.
Mm-hmm. Or Looking to Get Out. I think she was in that.
She was a little kid.
She was really young. Resident Evil actually did pretty good. That had Mila Jovovich. They ended up making 3 sequels to that of varying quality. But I do remember liking Resident Evil. That was directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, not to be confused with Paul Thomas Anderson, who's directed Boogie Nights and The Master and is one of the best directors working. Paul W.S. Anderson is not one of the best directors working. He's a bit of a hack, but he made those Alien versus Predator movies.
Okay.
And Event Horizon, which actually has some pretty good moments. Mm-hmm. But he's not too bad at directing low-budget science fiction movies.
Well, we still have another Resident Evil 6 to go to.
Is that right?
It's
in the works?
Mm-hmm. Supposedly, that's going to end the franchise.
Well, something has to, unless it's a big hit.
It's tentatively titled Resident Evil, the Final Chapter.
Well, they'll probably kill off Mila Jovovich in it, I assume. Hitman Agent 47 is pretty good. Need for Speed came out a couple of years. Anybody
I did
that?
See that. Yeah,
I didn't know that was dreadful. Based on a. It was dreadful.
Michael Keaton's kind of entertaining in it. Okay. He's sort of playing the guy behind the scenes and sort of the narrator of the big race, but it's not much. And Aaron Paul, I guess this was his big bid for big screen stardom, and it's not quite happened yet for him. Breaking Bad hasn't transferred yet to the big screen, so we'll see about that. But
3 or 4 years ago, Michelle and Melissa Howland put together an article for Weird Movie Geeks about the best movies adapted from video games.
Yeah, it was just a light little top 10.
And you guys put Lara Croft as number 1. Mm-hmm. And Silent Hill is number 2, and Final Fantasy, which I've never seen.
Silent Hill is number 2 spot. That's a creepy.
Yeah, that's a pretty scary movie.
That's a pretty
scary imagery in it. You guys had Doom at number 7. The second Resident Evil is number 4.
Mm-hmm.
The first Resident Evil is number 6. I would put number 1.
If you've never seen Final Fantasy: The Spirit Within,
Yeah,
check it out. If you find it, if it's on Netflix, or I'm sure by now it's on YouTube.
Movies based on video games, not a whole lot to recommend.
Yeah, Final Fantasy is like the first big use of motion capture, I guess, for a feature film. Yeah,
it looks really good. It still does.
All right. Well, I do want to talk about one other thing. Our friends over at the Moolah Theater over on Vandeventer have started up a weekly midnight series. This weekend is Wet Hot American Summer, which has become a Netflix TV show. Is that right?
Yeah, it's like the Netflix show, I think, is a prequel to this this film. So it shows all the characters got together.
But doesn't it have a lot of the same cast?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I guess they're trying to make them. It's like, I guess, about 15 years since the original, but they're trying to make themselves look younger than they did in the original from 15 years ago.
So does it work? Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it. I hear it's very funny, though, but I haven't seen the new series yet. I've seen the original Wet Hot American Summer.
Andy? Have you seen my swimming buddy?
I was busy.
It's your job to make sure kids don't drown.
Where are we going?
To a big secret pizza party.
Well, it's Moolah. There's a small theater off the lobby. They call it the Mini Moolah. And they're going to be showing all 7 or 8 episodes of this new Wet Hot American Summer in the Mini Moolah starting at 7:30. And then they'll be showing the original Wet Hot American Summer in the big screen. Have you seen the original Wet Hot American Summer?
I have.
Oh, okay.
I have. And I've watched a few of the episodes on Netflix.
Are they good?
It's funny. I can totally understand why it's taken off.
Paul Rudd and Bradley Cooper and Amy Poehler.
Elizabeth
and
Banks.
They're all back for this TV show?
Yeah.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. Huh. They got them all back. I guess they love the experience of the first one so much.
Yeah,
it's a perfect setup for Netflix.
Huh.
Yeah. Wet Hot American Summer is one of these films, kind of like Fast Times at Ridgemont High or Diner, where it just seems like the whole cast just exploded into stardom afterwards.
Yeah, so Janine Garofalo.
Really, yeah, and David Hyde Pierce. Yeah, it's really really amazing.
And then September 4th, we've got Grease, but not just Grease. It's the Grease Sing Along.
Oh.
I've seen the Grease Sing-Along. That's the first time I ever saw Grease, believe it or not, was at the Grease Sing-Along. It's a movie I avoided for most of my life. And then, it's kind of fun. They also didn't they do a Sound of Music Sing-Along?
Yes,
huge.
And they've done a Wizard of Oz
and a Mary Poppins one.
Yeah,
And the lyrics are easy to read and all that. Yes.
On the 24th, After Hours, Martin Scorsese's After Hours. That's a terrific choice for a midnight
movie. Yeah.
I've always thought that would be a good midnight movie.
That's one of those films it's very divisive. Either you really love it and you totally get it, embrace it, or you're like, once was enough.
Griffin Dunne and Roseanne Arquette and Cheech and Chong and
Terry Garr.
Yeah.
Catherine O'Hara.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. And,
Linda Fiorentino.
Oh, yeah. That was sort of femme fatale days.
Yeah,
there.
Martin Scorsese directed that in maybe around 87, 88, somewhere in there.
Something like that. Yeah.
I love it. Then we've got The Evil Dead, the original Evil Dead, Sam Raimi with Bruce Campbell. And then they're showing Back to the Future Part 2.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of an unusual choice.
Well, I guess since most of Back to the Future, or at least the first half of it, is set in 2015, I guess that's why.
So go to the Moolah. We'll also be covering these at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. And they're going to have stand-up comedians on stage before the movie as well. So they're really trying to do something a little different with their midnight shows over at the Moolah. So
that's interesting.
Support local midnight shows. The Tivoli, which is the midnight show that I host this weekend, they've got Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. So you need to decide if you want to see Indiana Jones Friday night and Wet Hot American Summer Saturday night, or Wet Hot American Summer Friday night and Indiana Jones Saturday night. It's the dilemma.
Got choices galore.
I know. All right. Well, we're going to have to wrap it up. We'll be back next weekend with our reviews of No Escape, We Are Your Friends, Mistress America, and Walk in the Woods. Signing off, I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And listen again next week.
Black leather, rock. Black leather, ta-ta-ta. Oh, naughty state. Hello, Don.
Black leather, rock. Black leather, ta-ta-ta. Black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather, rock.